and welcome back to W Rated, the podcast where we watch the world's worst rated movies. I'm Daisy, and as always, I am joined by podcast co-creator and co-host Claire for today's episode, where we dive into our second film selected from IMDb's current bottom 100 rated films. Claire, how are you doing today? You've had a big morning. Tell us all about it.
Yes, I'm very confused. I was on the radio this morning. Yeah, I was on talk radio talking about movies, which is very exciting. I've never been on the radio before, and they seem to think that I was a real film critic. They also gave me a new name.
They give you a new name? I think I missed the beginning, so.
I'm Claire Brunton, but my Twitter handle is Claire Ellen Hope, which are my middle names, and they found me on Twitter, and so they called me Claire Hope, which, is fine.
I did hear that, actually, yeah.
I don't mind it, but my mum was listening, so now my mum was like, oh, that's a really good name, it sounds really arty, and I was like, yeah, it was a mistake. She was like, oh, no, I really like it, and does my mum want me to change my name?
That can be just like your alias for your film critiquing.
Well, my Twitter and my old blog were all anonymous as such, because I used to be a teacher and I didn't want any of the students to find it when I was still working. And then only in the last year, I've been like, oh, it's fine, I'll just put it all in my name. And now I'm like, oh, now I have two names and I like the second name more. I'm like, I don't really want to go back and change all the old stuff.
Yeah, it's a bit, everyone's thinking about branding now, isn't it? It's a whole big thing where you have to be one thing across all of your social media so people can find you and stuff, which is, I'm sure at some point I'm going to regret naming everything Tequila Brie, but for now, that's my internet persona.
I love it. It's a great one.
There's a good backstory. If you're ever curious, just ask me. I'll be happy to tell it. Today's episode was actually a pick from me. It's number 23 on the bottom 100 chart, with an average rating of 2.9 out of 10. It's one of the 11 sort of blank movie parodies, aka sort of scary movie, etc., on the bottom 100. So we thought we'd chip away at it over time rather than leaving them all to one go, because I think we'd both lose the will to live. The film that we'll be discussing on today's episode is Date Movie. I chose this because I'd seen it before, and it was easily accessible on Amazon Prime. And I thought it'd be like a pretty easy, mindless watch in a way, I guess. Claire, what did you think when I picked this film for our second episode?
So I totally thought I was to blame for this. So I'm really glad you've taken responsibility.
I thought that I picked it.
I picked it. So I think you suggested it as like one of three. I think you were like, we should do one of these ones next.
Yes.
And I had seen Date Movie before. So I was like, yes, Date Movie, perfect. Already seen it. Nice and easy. And it was available to stream. So I was like, sure, like, let's do Date Movie. I remember watching it when I was a teenager and I didn't think it was that bad. I was so wrong.
I know.
I texted you when I was watching it and just said, I'm genuinely ashamed I've told people this movie isn't that bad, because it is. It's wow. We're only on film two and I think I've already, I'm broken.
God. Right. I'm really, really keen to hear more of your thoughts, considering this has gone south very, very quickly.
So sorry.
No, but this is what the podcast is all about, right? So just to give a little bit of a sort of synopsis of the film before we go into sort of spoiler territory, it comes from two of the six writers behind the actually really successful and quite well-received Scary Movie parody series, at least the first few in the series anyway, and essentially takes the same premise of parodying a genre of film, this time applying it to rom-coms. So the directors and writers are a duo, there we go. So the directors and writers are a duo, Aaron Seltzer and Jason Friedberg, and it stars Alison Hannigan, Adam Campbell as the two leads. And then you've also got some big names in there as well. Fred Willard, Jennifer Coolidge, and a supporting role from Sophie Monk. And so the IMDb score for this film is a very, very low 2.8. I think that's definitely lower than the last film that we did, right, Claire?
It is on the IMDb. It's not everywhere, though.
that's, yes, that's an interesting point. I think we might come on to a bit later.
Mm-hmm.
And then just as a bit of a synopsis for you guys about what the film is actually about. IMDb doesn't give too much away, actually. It literally says a spoof of romantic comedies, which focuses on a man, his crush, his parents and her father, which is wrong.
Would you? I was going to say
that doesn't summarise the film whatsoever. It actually focuses on a woman.
And her crush and her parents. So they've just got the wrong pronouns.
God. I mean, I'm not sure where that came from. I'm not sure if this is kind of like edited. It's not like Wikipedia, right? It's edited by actual people. Maybe that just, yeah, slight mistake there.
I think they pull it from somewhere, though. So someone somewhere has put that there and they've pulled it from... Someone.
So there's also a storyline that is provided by an IMDb user, which I actually think summarizes it a bit better. And ahead mm-hmm. of spoilers, it doesn't actually give too much away. So I think I might share that one as well. So the storyline is Julia Jones is unhappy. She's overweight, spends forever working at her father's diner and believes she will always be lonely. This is until she meets Grant Fokudoda. Before she can have their dream wedding, they must meet each other's parents and survive the scheming Andy. A little bit more
perfect
information there, and it's correct. So,
thank you, film underscore fan on IMDb.
Exactly, a little shout out there. So, spoiler warning, from here on out, we will be going into lots of detail on Date Movie. So if you are thinking of watching and don't want any spoilers, please do pop us on pause, go watch it and come back. Otherwise, Claire, please do take it away. And give us your first thoughts on Date Movie.
Well, I want to start with, like, because we've both seen this movie before, and we both willingly have chosen to watch it again. I mean, we had to do our due diligence for the podcast and rewatch it. But, like, I don't know what your history with the movie is, but I've realised that I clearly have a Stockholm Syndrome issue with this film. So I saw it probably in 2006 when it came out. And I remember specifically when I watched it because I was very, very, very unwell. And I was basically bedridden for a couple of days. And I was 17, I think, 16 or 17 at the time. But my parents were going out for the evening for some reason. And I think they felt guilty leaving me alone when I was so sick. Aww. So one of their friends that they were going out with very kindly brought over a big box of DVDs for me to watch while I was home alone, which is lovely. This was one of them because I remember watching this Flight Plan, the Jodie Foster, where, like, does she have a kid or is she crazy? And is the kid in the aeroplane? It's a very strange movie. I can't actually remember what happened. Well, it's also very difficult to watch when you're a bit delirious because there's a lot of, like, you have to pay attention. And I did Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy as well. So it was a really odd mix of films. But I remember this one being the one I enjoyed the most. So
interesting.
I have been telling people, you know, first Scary Movie is quite good. I think it's the third one as well, quite good. And I was like, a Date Movie, it's not bad. And then I spent my New Year's Eve by myself watching this film. And a cursed 16-year-old Claire, a cursed Aaron Seltzer and Jason Friedberg. I think I cursed you a little bit at the thought that we had chosen to do this film.
It was too easy doing Flintstones first, I feel like.
I thought this was going to be easy. I was like, this is going to be...
security.
I was like, this is a really nice, easy one. We've both already seen it's a Date Movie. It's a bit stupid. It's going to be a bit dated, but it's going to be really easy and it's not going to be that bad a watch. Oh my God.
And how wrong we were.
Oh my God. I mean, what's your history with the film?
To be honest, not a lot. I remember watching it with an old friend probably about 4 or 5 years ago. I think it was just a case of, like, hanging out at my house, deciding what films to watch. And I think before this, we watched Fred and Perry.
Nice.
Fred and Perry? Is that what it's called?
Kevin and Perry.
Kevin and Perry. Fred Perry is the is the brand.
Yes.
That's what I'm thinking of. Kevin and Perry. Now, you can tell that I didn't used to watch that when I was a kid or when I was younger. But I really enjoyed that, even though that was a bit stupid and, you know, it's that kind of humour, isn't it? And we decided to watch this afterwards for some reason. Again, maybe it's because we thought, oh, this would just be like really easy to watch, a few cheap laughs, etc. I don't remember having much of an opinion about it. I think I probably just thought, oh, something's funny. Oh, that's a film reference. Great. but I definitely didn't have as much an opinion on it as I do now.
I will say, looking at my notes from my rewatch a couple of days ago, I clearly got bored with the film and clearly just stopped having an opinion. And all I did was just start listing every film I could name that was referenced.
Oh, really? How many do you think, how many do you think was referenced? How many did you get?
Well, I've written down at least 20.
Yeah.
I know I didn't get them all, but I've written down at least 20.
I know that it's really strange, actually. It's quite hard to find the full list. I thought that they would be quite open with it in terms of what they parodied. I know that there's quite a big list of references, spoofs, on the IMDb page. I'll just quickly count and then we can edit it back.
I mean, what I will say while you're counting, you say it's quite hard to find a list of all the films that they reference. I actually found this film as a whole incredibly hard to research, and if you follow me on Twitter, you'll have seen that I also spent my New Year's Eve accidentally on some porn websites. Apparently, when you type in date movie and you click enough links, you just get taken to some extra special date kind of movies. So
that was so hard to count whilst listening to that story. Oh gosh. Oh dear, yeah, no, what a New Year's that would be for you.
It was rough.
It was rough going. Not only did you have to watch this film, but
just accidental porn.
Yeah.
And like not like any sort of normal, like it was like a weird like Tumblr blog-esque one. So like it's pop-ups everywhere, and it was very upsetting.
Yeah. Not what you need on New Year's at all.
No, and not what I expect to find when I Google date movie 2006 fat phobia. Apparently they are some high-caliber porn terms.
Who knew? Who knew? So in that time, I've managed to count on IMDb. You know, they've got the section where it talks about what they've spoofed or referenced, etc. Mm-hmm. This says 52. Now, I would argue some of these don't count because they're so, like, tenuous.
Mm.
But in terms of the kind of films that they do spoof, so they've said they've got about 52 spoofs in the film. I don't think there is technically that many. I think some of the ones that have been listed as a reference are rather tenuous, but the story itself, the main parodies are My Big Fat Greek Wedding and two films that are in a series, Meet the Parents and Meet the Fockers. I have seen Meet the Fockers, but I don't think I've seen My Big Fat Greek Wedding or Meet the Parents, but I know what happens in Meet the Parents. I'm very aware of like certain scenes.
Weird that you've seen Meet the Fuckers, but not Meet the Parents.
Yeah, no, yeah. As a teenager, people just like put certain films on. And at that point in time, I didn't care whether I'd seen the whole series. Whereas now I'm like, I refuse to watch something in a series if I have not watched the rest of them.
I went to see Meet the Parents in the cinema.
I wouldn't have been allowed in.
No, I think it was like one of the first 12s that I got into. I was really proud of myself.
Ooh. And like in terms of obviously when you're spoofing films in another film, do you like the films that they were spoofing? Is that something that you think is important for this, something like this to work? Is that where it kind of went wrong? Or I'm interested to sort of dive into starting to think about what actually happened in this film and what our reactions were and why it was so bad.
Yeah, I mean, I want to go through the actual... The whole plot. I've written it down in front of me. I want to go through that. But I will, before we go into that, I think it is important when you're looking at a spoof, you want to know the films that they're spoofing. I would know a lot of them, and I'm a big rom-com fan. Mm-hmm. What actually kind of irritated me is that they weren't just spoofing rom-coms. They were also like spoofing celebrities and spoofing like random films like Napoleon Dynamite, which like I love Napoleon Dynamite, but that's not like a romantic comedy. I know there's a little bit of romance in it, but it's really not a rom-com.
Really strange choice.
For me, the bucket overfloweth, and not in a good way. You know, 53 movies to spoof. It's too many.
I think that's something that they... I know we watched some cast interviews. I believe we watched the same ones. Because one... Alison Hannigan, basically, and Adam Campbell both like sort of like boasting about how many spoofs were in there. And it was kind of like, well, that's definitely quantity over quality. I'm telling you that right now.
Absolutely.
Doesn't make it better just because you've stuffed it full of. And what counts as a spoof here, like, I really don't think you can count it as a spoof, like some of them. I know that we can go into it a bit more in a bit, but essentially I think the main reason that this film didn't work is because you're taking something that is genuinely funny and you're copying it essentially the same. You're not adding anything to it. You're not riffing on it or subverting it or changing it in any way to make a commentary or make it funnier. You're just copying it. So there's nothing worse than having something that was originally funny and then making it unfunny.
100%. So like, this was, I think this was the first one after the Scary Movies. This was their first attempt at doing something outside of the horror genre. And the reason that the Scary Movies work for the most part, especially the first one, is that you're taking something that wasn't meant to be funny and really over-highlighting what is funny. And we've all watched, especially older horror films, and laughed at it and been like, as if anyone would ever do that. When you take something that is already funny, what really are you adding to it by spoofing it? You're just doing an impression. And this was like watching. Yeah. I mean, I'm not a big, I don't watch a lot of impression TV shows. This felt like watching a really long, big impression show. And they were all terrible. Okay, let's go through the plot. Because they had a really easy job here. Almost every rom-com follows the same formula. Even kind of anti-rom-coms like 500 Days of Summer, which plays with time frames and time loops, they all follow a basic structure of person is alone for whatever reason, person finds someone they like and they have a meet cute, something happens to make the relationship go well, then inciting incident, relationship goes bad, then big dramatic gesture of love, and then happily ever after. Would you agree?
Yep, that's what I pay to see.
Yeah, that is what we pay to see. And if I want to see a spoof of it, that's what I want. Kind of get it, but they go a bit up and down and all over the place. And I think it is because of what we said. They're taking on too many films. But we'll start at the beginning. We open with Alison Hannigan, who most people at the time would have known from Buffy, who then went on to do How I Met Your Mother. They would be her two big shows, but also the American Pie franchise. So she has done comedy films before, though in a much smaller role. So she plays Julia. The thing that we have with this lovely lady on the screen is that she doesn't look like Alison Hannigan. She is wearing a very oversized fat suit. And Alison Hannigan is not overweight herself. And we get, it's meant to parody My Big Fat Greek Wedding. And one of the biggest flaws in My Big Fat Greek Wedding is that the girl in My Big Fat Greek Wedding isn't fat. She's just not skeletal. Mm. She's just not Ally McBeal skinny, to get another Ally McBeal reference in. but we have, so we get Alison Hannigan as Julie, then goes about the town to try and, she goes out into New York City, and we get an opening kind of dance sequence to the film, to Milkshake by Khalees, which was, we'll say, this film did have a good soundtrack for the time, this song included.
Better, can I just say that it's much better used in Mean Girls, much better.
Oh, 100%, 100%. But, you know, the one thing this film did do okay with was the music. So we watch Julia as she dances up and down New York Street. But the big, funny, hilarious thing is that she's really fat, and fat people can't dance, and fat people aren't attractive. So when she goes up to all these builders to try and get some male attention, and she wiggles and her dress lifts up and they see one of her oversized thighs, they shoot themselves in the head with a nail gun, because fat phobia and suicide are hilarious.
Oh, I can't. I don't want to. I was just shaking throughout the whole thing. I was just shaking my head, looking up to the heavens, and eventually just like completely facepalmed, because Jesus Christ, what an opening.
I don't know what's worse, the fact that it's just not funny, or the fact that, especially now, in 2006, unfortunately, that stuff still did play to laughs. It was uncomfortable, but it was still somewhat, definitely now wouldn't. So I don't know if it's the fact that it just was never funny, or if looking at it from a 2020 lens, it's also really offensive. I don't know which one's worse.
Yeah, I think, to be honest, I don't know if you disagree, but I think that was the thing that felt the most unfunny throughout the whole thing, purely just because, like, there were some things that were, number one, horrific, number two, painfully unfunny, but at least they weren't, like, vindictive. Like, this is literally pointing someone at laughing at a type of person. And I think the thing that, to answer your sort of, try and answer your question about whether it was ever funny, I think media told us it was, but now with the development of the internet and, you know, people's voices from all over being heard and being able to be a lot more positive and have their sort of own opinions on things that aren't as dictated, people are challenging that kind of view more, right?
Yeah.
So I think people just didn't challenge it back then, which is the difference, whereas people challenge it now and people realise how shitty it is.
Yeah, that's really true, actually, because I don't think I would have found that funny back in the day. I was a lot less culturally aware. I was, you know, 16, 17, and mostly was just thinking about Panic at the Disco and where I could get some alcohol from. Which,
good old days.
I mean, to be fair, that is 100% still what I think about now. Panic at the Disco, great. But I do think that thing that we were told it was funny, and you did have so much less access to different voices, especially within comedy, and that still is an issue now, but we are seeing differences. And we talked last week, or in the first episode actually, we talked about TikTok and Vine, and that even if mainstream comedy isn't giving us access to those voices, the access is there if you want it, you can find it. I was going to challenge you on your point, but I think you have won, that this is the most kind of the least funny and the most offensive, because you're right, it is vindictive in its kind of gross out offensive humour. Because my challenge was going to be her family, because we then from this scene to the restaurant, as similar to Big Fat Greek Wedding, and we meet her father, her mother and her sister. Her father being a black man, her mother being an Asian woman, and her sister being, I believe, Japanese.
Yeah, I think her mother expressed that she was of Indian heritage, and the sister was definitely Japanese, but she was very much a caricature Harajuku girl, Japanese.
Yeah, and they also reference that they're also Jewish. And the whole joke, because in My Big Fat Greek Wedding, she's only allowed to marry a Greek man, which is a thing that happens in Greek culture. Within this film, the parody of it is that she has to marry someone who is black, Indian, Japanese and Jewish, I believe, and she's also white herself, and it's the big ha ha ha, a man like that doesn't exist. And it's like I saw a really good kind of, I think it was on Letterboxd, someone saying what would have been funnier if you were parodying My Big Fat Greek Wedding. Within My Big Fat Greek Wedding, the reason that they want her to marry a Greek person is because of all the traditions that come with being Greek. And it's such a family-led culture and such a community that they don't want her to marry someone outside of the community because they just won't know the customs and they won't be able to relate to how she grew up, which is very interesting. It was written by a Greek woman. The fun thing they could have done with this was do the complete inverse and make them really boring, really plain white American people who have no culture and be like, you have to marry someone that's just like us, and be like,
yeah,
well, boring. But instead we just get some wildly, wildly stereotypical 2D characters.
It's funny, isn't it? Because they just miss the point of the reasons that the things they are spoofing are funny. So you just hit the nail on the head there by saying, okay, well, the reason, or even it's interesting in the film, obviously there's a reason that, like you explained, why in My Big Fat Greek Wedding she has to, or her parents want her to marry someone Greek. It's taking the essence of the joke and making something else out of the essence of the joke, not looking at the joke from the outside and then timesing it by 10 until it doesn't make sense anymore.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Kind of. That makes sense.
So she then meets, I've forgotten the name of the very cleverly named Matt Suter in the film.
He's got two names, actually. His first name is Grant, which is always the case, but there is two second names for him, two surnames, because one is in the unrated extended edition and one is in the normal edition.
Oh, so the one that I'm looking at is Funk Your Duda. I'm guessing that in the unrated it's a C instead of an N.
Fock. Yeah.
Ah.
So it's a fock as in Meet the Fockers.
Yeah.
So even then it doesn't go as far as it could have, and I'm like, usually I'm like, it goes too far, but I'm like, well, if you could, that joke was right there and you've not even gone that far, it's just bizarre.
No, so, but like, they must have chosen not to do it for a specific reason, to do with either the censorship or to do with the advertising. There must have been a reason why they didn't do it.
Okay. I just thought that they were just lazy and missed an opportunity.
I mean, that 100% too could be the truth. That would not surprise me at all.
But then also, if you're going to spoof something, don't use the same joke. Which is what we said before.
Yeah, that's the whole like, film, Daisy. If they don't do that, they've got no film left.
No, literally. But like, for example, me saying, okay, well, if you're playing on the word fucker because it sounds like fucker, then just say that, because that's a comment on what they tried to do with the original film, right?
Mm-hmm.
I understand if that's not allowed for whatever reason, but then do a different word and play on it in the same way.
Oh, that's too hard. It's too difficult.
Yeah, too much work.
But so she meets Gran. He is kind of interested in her, but kind of not. And she's made to believe by her very unsupportive family that no one good looking would ever like her because she's so fat and gross. So she goes to I've never seen Hitch. She goes to Hitch,
no, who,
just talking about laziness, they didn't even rename the character. She goes to Hitch, who is not Will Smith, and gets what I've described as a pimp your ride sequence, or pimp my ride sequence. I sound very British middle class when I say pimp my ride. It's not words for me, unfortunately. I actually never watched
not
that
in
show.
The vocab.
No. But yeah, and so, you know, we see more scenes about how she's a terrible kisser to really emphasise how disgusting and fat she is. They pull out a whole chicken wing.
It's all coming back to me in like PTSD flashbacks.
I know. And then they take her to a car garage and they like file down her feet. There's like a back waxing montage, which I wasn't sure was maybe from 40-year-old virgin, but I don't even know if 40-year-old virgin was out at this point.
I think it was, but I don't think it's mentioned in the references that it's spoofing. So
2005, so it had just come out.
So maybe I don't think it was maybe it's too new, but then I know that there's another thing that happens in this that's so new.
Yes, I think it's the same thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, so eventually they make her look gorgeous, a little bit like Miss Congeniality. She appears in a gorgeous dress and she's ready to go on The Bachelorette. Yay, you know, let's make women
Hashtag desperate edition.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Extreme Bachelor Desperate Edition.
Yeah, where then very luckily, Grant is the suitor on that, the bachelor, and the way that he picks his women is to shoot all the women he doesn't like.
I don't have anything to say.
At least we're laughing at discussing it. Yeah, I think we're laughing more remembering it than we did watching it.
I think, do you know what's horrific about it, though, is that I can see the scene so much more vividly than the films that I like.
I know.
Which is really unfair.
It's fine. It's, you know, this will come out in February. It's the 2nd of January to us. We've got good films and bad films galore to fill our brains with. Don't worry. But yeah, so he shoots everyone else and decides he's going for Julia or Julie. I don't know. Alison Hannigan. I don't know who she is. The woman. And so then they go off. They go on a date to a restaurant. Hilarious joke.
Hilarious. So jokes.
Where we then get a When Harry Met Sally sandwich sequence. I'm going to be a little bit controversial here because I know how important that scene is to the history of romantic comedies, to the history of comedies. I fucking hate that scene in Hung and Harry Met Sally. It makes I just hate it. I don't think it's funny. It's overdone, and I hate how much importance people put on it. So having to watch
that's
it
the thing, isn't it?
Having to watch it again in this film, I was like, it wasn't funny the first time.
I think the problem with the I don't think that that's by far the best thing in When Harry Met Sally, but because it's so iconic, that's all people talk about compared to the rest of the film. But it, regardless of whether you find that funny in itself, in this spoof version, what is so bizarre to me is that there's just no setup for it happening. Like, it just cuts to them at the restaurant and he's doing it.
Mid fake orgasm. Though I think it's implied it's a real orgasm because he's had some food.
I don't even think it is because he's ordering at the end when he stops, when he's finished. She goes, oh, so you'll have this then, sort of thing, like on the menu. And then Alison Hannigan goes, I'll have what he's having. And it's just like,
Doesn't quite work.
So, I mean, I'm just like, okay, let's just move on, see what else you've got, because that's not great.
But, I mean, that is, so in one of the videos that I watched in preparation, Adam Campbell plays Grant. That's how he got the job. He just auditioned by doing a version of that scene, and they gave him the whole film just off of that. So if you don't like that scene, as I did not, probably told you a lot about what's to come.
A precursor for the rest of the film.
Yeah.
To be honest, I thought at least... The thing is, I was about to give them some credit, but I don't think that they actually earned this credit. I think it was just me analysing it in a way that I was like, oh, okay. The way I saw it that was interesting is that obviously in When Harry Met Sally, it's a woman's orgasm, and she's made to look really sexy while it's happening, like all of this stuff. But then when it's switched around the other way, it's kind of played for a lot more laughs and probably is a bit more realistic than what.
Well, I almost gave them some props for a bit later on in the film. There's a flashback sequence that's Pretty Woman talking about how Grant meets his best friend, Andy. But the Pretty Woman is played by Grant in the full Julia Roberts outfit. I did laugh at that too. And then I was like, wait, no, why am I laughing? Because I think...
I know, because that's not the intention. We're laughing because it's a flip of gender stereotypes, right? So we're like, oh, okay, this is an interesting view. But they're not doing it for that.
No, they're doing it because it's funny to see a man in a dress.
Yeah.
So I took that credit back. But anyway, so they have this restaurant date, things are going well. And then the bit that not only did I think was one of the worst parts of the film, but I just don't understand it and I can't figure out what they were parodying. As they leave the restaurant, they walk down the road and Julia, Alison Hannigan's character, sees a homeless man and says, shall we have a bum fight? And then proceeds to beat the shit out of this homeless man, and Grant joins in. And it's not even that I don't think it's... Yeah, it's not even that I don't think it's funny. I don't think it's funny. But I also don't understand how that came into the script in any way, shape or form. I don't understand what it's parodying. I couldn't figure out what the reference was.
So, according to IMDb, the reference is a video series called Cause for Concern, where a teenage film crew record homeless people fighting and performing in shenanigans across the Vegas and California metropolitan areas. So, you know, a really, really highly regarded, totally not lowbrow kind of, like, ridiculous and should not be in existence thing to reference. Like, what the hell? It must have been something that was, like, talked about a lot at the time or something. I have no idea. It must have been, like, a, you know, like, how one year... every single time someone wanted to seem relevant, maybe it was last year or the year before, they mentioned the floss, like everything from the dance from Fortnite, just to seem relevant. Maybe it's one of those instances where something was in pop culture at that time, so they had to include it because it made them seem relevant. And now it's just like, we don't even know what they're referencing at this point because it's so dated. Like,
no, it does make sense, though, because I don't remember that, but I do remember probably around the same time that we in the UK, we had, like, Happy Slaps. Were you just like...
As soon as you said... Yeah, as soon as you started that sentence, I was like, oh, I think I know where this is going.
When people just go up to people in the street and, like, slap them for no reason.
Yep.
So I guess, now I understand the reference. What a stupid reference, because this is meant to be parodying rom-coms.
It's just so weird why it's in there.
And really there's strange. Also in the same scene, there's like a parody of Michael Jackson trying to abduct a child.
Yep. Yep.
Like, this doesn't happen in When Harry Met Sally, guys. Have you seen a rom-com?
That's what it's all about.
Yeah. Then they go and they meet Julia's parents in a meet the parents style scene, which parodies Jinx the cat, who in Meet the Parents very famously can use the toilet, which my colleague at work has taught her cat how to do. They can't. Her cat doesn't flush the toilet, but her cat, she has a spare bathroom and the cats use that toilet as a litter tray. Very clever.
Stop.
Yeah.
I didn't think that would ever be a thing.
Yeah, there's like whole training kits for it to like coax them up onto the toilet.
Do you know what though? I don't think I'd ever want that to happen after seeing this film. I think it'd bring back too many bad memories.
Yes. So in Meet the Parents, it's fine. It's not particularly cute, but it's fine. The cat uses the toilet. It's a funny thing, like how funny that he's trained his cat to use the toilet. In this film, it's like what we would get if I asked my 9-year-old nephew to write me a toilet joke. I think he'd do something more nuanced than this.
Yes. Yeah. Basically. And the worst thing is it goes on for so long.
So long. It's like
so long.
The cat has explosive diarrhea for at least 60 seconds, which in a movie is a long time. And then like there's a joke where he gets the match out and it's so funny that a cat
also
took shit.
If a cat can do that and like do all of this funny stuff around it, he would have locked the door. If he's going to be doing all this funny stuff, like, ha-ha, the cat's doing things that people do, toilet jokes, it's just like, well...
Can I just say...
All of that, he would have locked the door behind him.
You can't hear it because hopefully my microphone isn't that strong, but at that very moment, my cat started using the litter tray that is outside of this door.
As nature intended.
I was like, what is that noise? And I was like, oh, my God, she knows.
She got the matches.
I don't think so, unfortunately. Thanks, Dottie. Little cameo from the cat.
Little cameo.
You know,
cameo.
When talking about cats shitting, why not have a cat taking a shit?
We really like to ground the podcast in, you know, in the stuff that's really happening.
I mean, I really need to look at what I talk about. So far, I've mentioned accidental porn. I've mentioned cats shitting. I mean, where am I going? What's my life?
If you didn't, I think everyone would have listened to this episode and got, that was really disappointing. I feel like there wasn't enough accidental porn in cat shitting. But it gets worse. Please, Claire, please. I really just want to get this next scene over and done with because it was the worst thing I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, see, it's one of two scenes now. Are you talking about the scene with the grandmother?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, I was going to skip that scene out.
Oh, good.
And so... They're also in a Meet the Family. There is a scene in Meet the Family. Oh, my cat's back. There is a scene in Meet the Family where he knocks over an urn full of one of the grandparents' ashes. In this film, when he does it, the urn smashes and a whole dead body comes out of it. And then Jinxie the cat, who's already given us such fun moments, gets onto the dead body and starts humping it and at one point whips out a pack of condoms to use on the dead body.
That was just the nail on the head for me. Like, the fact that, how funny, like, animals hump things and they don't know what they're doing. Like, ha, 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 oh, stop. This is so... All of them are shouting to the cat, stop, but not one of them thought, it's a cat, I'm going to go and pick it up. I know this is not meant to be serious, but it was just frustrating. But then that whole thing with the condoms, I was like, oh no, this is vile. This is vile.
It's the problem that in the first film, it is slightly funny. And I do always find it so... My parents never were into the same sort of comedy as me. And still now, my mum, we don't watch comedy films together. We don't have the same sense of humour. My parents actually really enjoyed the Meet the Parents films. It was like a surprise. I saw it in the cinema. And a few years later, I think I got it on DVD or it was on BBC One for Christmas or something like that. My parents sat down to watch it. And I remember them both actually, like, for what it was, really enjoying it. And it was because it took what should be a normal meeting and overdid it. And that moment in the film where the ashes fall on the ground and the cat comes along and starts using it as litter, you know, that would never happen in reality, because in reality you would run over and pick the cat up. So you've already pushed reality a step further in the original film, because rom-coms are a satire of real relationships. Rom-coms in themselves are sort of satires. It's what comedy films are. They over-emphasize life. So
which is probably why this is some this genre is so much harder to parody than something like the horror genre, right?
Because
that's taking itself very seriously.
Yeah, you can't take something that's already completely silly and ludicrous and double it. It doesn't work. Mm. It isn't a case of just being bigger. That's not how improv works. I mean, maybe it is. I don't have an improv degree. Watched a lot of improv this week, though.
I would just like to add on top of just to round off the end of that scene, my notes. And I quote, physically gagged at the dead mum. The condom joke was fucking vile. There we go. Just wanted to end that there.
And lovely. I didn't write anything. I think, yeah.
I've got, too busy, like, rocking backwards and forwards in a corner.
I've just written meet the parents, nothing else. But then two sentences later in my notes, I do have the note, would this still even get aired? Like, would a TV channel like Channel 4 show this? And I meant to look it up. I meant to look up when the last time it aired on TV was. Because I would imagine that it actually was still getting aired today and it would just come with an advisory notice. Which, you know, fair enough. It definitely wouldn't be made anymore. Mm. Bloody hell, I hope not. Moving on, we then get to go and meet Grant's best man, Andy. And would you know, Andy is a girl. Ooh. And women don't be trusting women. So obviously Julia is very threatened of Andy, the glamorous, gorgeous blonde model who is going to be the best man at the wedding. And we get a very long extended sequence of Andy doing many bikini car washes and various different outfit changes to, is it Pussycat Dolls? Another great song.
Yeah, I think so. But I think you're going to hate me, but that song is used so much. I just can't stand it anymore.
It 100% is. And I think I've come like full circle back around on it.
All right. It was used twice just in this film, but like in separate moments. It's not even, you know, when people reuse a song to
like a reprise
a moment before. Yeah. It wasn't, I'm pretty sure it was just used in a separate scene completely. And I'm like, I don't think that's how soundtracks work, but go off, I guess. It's funny because, you know, the lyrics are related to what's happening on screen.
It's so on the nose.
It's a popular song. We're so funny.
I definitely think I've come full circle on that song now and I'm back to thinking it's not a bad song. But it's not just that she's super hot and that she washes cars really well, but she also rubs greasy hamburgers all over her boobs, because even though the film told us less than 30 minutes ago that being overweight and eating chicken wings bad, what is good is using food as porn props.
Yeah.
Maybe that's how I ended up on the porn.
I knew that. That's exactly what I've got. I went into this film knowing that and I was like, oh, right. Yep. Confirmed. Oh, it's just... Yeah, anyway.
And so the biggest thing, and I mean, this, in fairness, this is not a problem with this film. This is a problem with the genre it's parodying, is that women hate women.
Yeah.
So I can't really, that's not these guys' fault.
That's spoofing My Best Friend's Wedding, right?
Yeah.
This whole setup.
Yeah, so I can't really blame them for that one. I just, as someone who was a female best man for her, like, straight male friend, we're not always just trying to bed the groom. Like, we've got better things to do.
But in the film that they're spoofing, I'm pretty sure that that's the case. So
yeah,
we can't blame them too much for that one.
No, we can't. So we'll let that one go. So then we get some more Meet the Parents spoofs, where they then go and meet his parents, where we get Fred Willard and Jennifer Coolidge, who are parodying the Meet the Fockers film.
Best thing about the film, these two, I think.
And they are genuine comedy actors, which I think is why. They are actual comedians.
Yeah.
And it shows. It shows a lot.
Absolutely.
So then we kind of just get a load more kind of little bits. We do have a big restaurant scene. And then I can't remember what happens, but the wedding doesn't happen. And I can't remember. It comes out that he... So does Andy, the best man, pull him aside and just throw herself at him?
Yeah, so there's like a few other scenes between now and then, but they're mainly just like Andy being jealous and saying that she wants to get back with Grant, because they used to be engaged as well as being friends now, and that was only 3 weeks ago in the film.
Yeah.
There's a random Kill Bill reference.
It is, in the wedding dress shop.
She's a bride, because she's the bride.
Yeah.
I was, to be fair, that's probably one of the cleverest things that they did.
It reminds me, so for our last episode for the Flintstones, I had pictures of me in a fancy dress outfit as Wilma Flintstone. Yeah. I did at university actually go to a Quentin Tarantino themed fancy dress as the bride, but not wearing the yellow. I got a wedding dress myself in blood.
Oh, I'm so jealous. I want to be invited to a Quentin Tarantino fancy dress party.
It was fun. I'll put the pictures up for people to see if I can find them.
And to be fair though, Claire, it just means that I'm expecting fancy dress related to every single episode that we do now.
I know.
When we get to the human centipede.
Oh God, I was more worried about I Know Who Killed Me. You haven't seen that film yet. I'm definitely not doing a fancy dress for that one. there's a dodgeball sequence.
Yeah, really random and like just thrown in there. But essentially, it gets to a point where it's the wedding day, and I should care more about the lead female's character, but as the film doesn't, it makes it very hard for you to do it. She's late to her own wedding because she gets a giant spot on her face.
Oh, yeah, and then she licks, so she pops her pimple and then licks all the pus off the mirror. Because, you know, she used to be fat and can't control herself.
Oh, sorry, I almost gagged again. There are so many times throughout this film that I gagged. We breezed past one of them, which was at when the dads are both playing basketball together. And I can't remember what film it's parodying, but it actually isn't Meet the Fockers. I think it's from something else. And he Julia's dad accidentally gets like hit in the face with Fred Willard's character's chest and sweaty chest, and he like licks all of his chest hair off and then
that's a Long Came Polly.
That's it. And basically coughs up a hairball, but like his mouth is just like full of his sweat. And honestly, I couldn't watch it.
I don't remember that scene. I only remember the original from A Long Came Polly. And I wonder if it's that's at the point where I started texting you going, why have I done this? Why am I watching
this? Because genuinely, Claire, like, I have a really weird thing about hair, and like I just hate if I find one of my hairs lying around, it really annoys me. And it's and then like, yeah, I just don't like wet hair and things like that. So watching that, honestly, I was close to being sick. Very close to being sick. So
lovely.
Just thought I'd make sure I
relived the whole moment.
Yeah. But yeah, so she's late to her wedding, and then in the meantime, when she's late to the wedding, there is sort of funny little jokes here and there, like Aunt Andy says to Grant, "How late is she?" or something, and he looks at his watch and it says she's late, or so, you know. I'm not telling it very well, but it wasn't a very good joke to begin with, but that little things like that did make me laugh. And then basically I think she kisses him, and then Julia sees it, so then they go into the breakup portion of the spoofs.
Oh, and within the whole film as well, there's like scattered throughout it random like Mr. and Mrs. Smith couples counselling moments as well.
Yeah.
Because then there's the joke, which again, I was just like, I think I'd given up by this point and just let it be funny, where they're like, you two seem really far apart, and they physically moved the chairs between the scenes and they're like miles apart.
Yeah.
If in doubt, go for the lowest form of humour, which is visual humour.
Yeah. But I think the thing, just when you were saying, like, they seem to, like, put little things here and there. Essentially, the reason that this film is as bad as it is because they haven't even tried to make an actual thread of story all the way through. Mm. They've basically pieced together the sketches they've wanted to do, and then worked backwards.
100%.
And kind of like, rather than like what you were saying with, okay, so we know, there's a really good example of a film. I think it's called Isn't It Romantic? What's her name? Where it was basically like, okay, here are all of the, I'm not saying it was a great film by any means, but what it did was it created its own story based on subverting or trying to subvert all the different rom-com stuff. Whereas this just goes, okay, here are all the which I know is what this is about, but this is why it didn't work.
Yeah,
is because it just went, okay, we're going to parody these three films, pin them together. Oh wait, how are we going to get that to work as one storyline? Because you know it's three different films.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's kind of why the quality of the story is so poor.
Yeah,
because that's how they've written it, basically.
But we're nearly there. So she then she then returns to her life in the restaurant and is very sad because also there's been a really kind of half mini subplot that she wants to be a pastry chef, not work in the restaurant, and they keep kind of picking that up and dropping it when they feel like it. So she goes back and they force her to marry one of the workers in the restaurant who doesn't like her, and that they decide to get married, and then she has a big flashback montage of how much she loved Grant, and then her parents show her a magazine article a la How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, telling all about how he was wrong and that he's waiting on the roof of a building for her, which is like Sleepless in Seattle, but he's been waiting there for 6 months, and then she rushes and we get a whole kind of Notting Hill, Jerry Maguire type kind of big climactic. She goes up to the roof, he goes down to the floor, which actually is a bit like the ending of New Girl, which I hope wasn't inspired by this.
Yes. No, I'd like to know.
They kind of miss each other, but then she accidentally falls off the building and lands in his arms, and it's very romantic, and they get married and they sail off into the sunset just in time for someone to do a impression of Owen Wilson in Wedding Crashers, who arrives just in time to go, is it too late to crash this wedding? Ha ha ha. And then just when you think it's over, they then just randomly give us a good 3 minutes though, King Kong parody, which features Carmen Electra, who's not been in the film, in what looks like a really expensive scene of them watching. So that it's that their honeymoon is that they go out and live King Kong, and King Kong just comes all over Carmen Electra.
Oh God.
Yeah. And that is the film.
Wait, I think you watched a different version to me, because that didn't happen when I watched mine.
In your one, does he just stamp on her?
Yep. You watched the unrated one, didn't you?
No.
How did you get that and I didn't? What did
I
you
didn't.
Watch?
I realised as I was saying it, that's the bit that I watched too. But then if you kept watching during the credits, they then had loads of, what do you call them?
Goofs, like, kind
of. And one of the ones in that is King Kong coming on Carmen Electra. So they obviously couldn't decide which version.
I missed that because my housemate came in and we were talking about New Year's Eve, and you can't pause Amazon Prime on when it's on the credit sequence on my TV for some reason. So I was like trying to watch it, and I was just like, yeah, I'm going to end up missing all of these. And I was just like, do you know what? I'll go back and watch these. And then I was like, what? Why would I do that to myself?
Yeah,
no,
you didn't miss anything.
I'm not gonna do that.
But so I wanted to get to the end of the plot, because I wanted to go back to a point you made a couple of minutes ago about how it feels really random and it doesn't flow very well as a film. So one of the first things is that whole last sequence, that King Kong sequence, was added on after the film was made. When they were making the movie, the trailer for King Kong came out, and they thought that the trailer looked so good that they just had to parody it in their film about rom-coms. So that scene was the most expensive scene of the whole movie. And I mean, it does look, it looks nice, like visually. And it's also Carmen Electra, who's only in that scene, won a Golden Razzie for her performance, which lasted 30 seconds. Like, I'm not, the Golden Raspberries aren't exactly the pinnacle of the award season, nor is Carmen Electra a particularly great actress. But I really don't think you can award someone a best or worst supporting actress trophy when they're only in the film for 30 seconds.
Yeah, there's no rules with those awards, is there?
There's no rules with the Academy Awards either. Didn't someone win a Best Actress award and they were only in the film for like 20 minutes or something?
I don't know, but that's intriguing.
But yes, so that's one of the things that, and I think that does show, and it's interesting, I wonder how many of these sequences they were like adding into the script as they were going.
Yeah.
And to look a little bit into the making of the film, in an interview Alison Hannigan did when she was promoting the film, she said she signed up to the film before there was any script. So when she signed up for the film, she really liked Scary Movie and she knew that these guys from Scary Movie were going to do this film. But there was
I feel bad for her now because the Scary Movies are actually good for what they are.
Well, and that's it. So she was, I think, Buffy ended in 2003 and she would have been filming this in around 2005. So Buffy had been ended for a couple of years and she'd not really done anything. She had done the pilot for How I Met Your Mother, but when she signed up for this, it hadn't been picked up to full season yet. So she's kind of in between things. She's had a little bit of success with American Pie and she's had a bit of success with Buffy, but nothing in a lead role. Anna Faris, who did Scary Movie films, between the first Scary Movie and which was in 2001 and now in 2006, she actually was getting like a really decent career building up, so you can see why Alison Hannigan would be like, I want that for me. So she signed up and they got funding for the film by making a fake trailer for a film that didn't exist. So they got Alison Hannigan to just do all these random spoofs in a trailer, and that's what they sold to the company to get the funding to write and film the movie. So whilst, yes, you feel sorry for her, she was in at the ground. Like, she knew
what was happening.
Yeah, she was there at day one.
She could have left.
Well, and so she signed up for it. And then she'd done the pilot of How I Met Your Mother and she was talking about how there was a moment where they weren't sure if she would actually be able to do the movie, because if How I Met Your Mother got picked up, she'd have to drop out of the movie. And they were trying to cast the movie and it was a big thing. But they managed to make it work that she could do both. And then...
Because you can doesn't mean that you should.
put your eggs in two baskets, I guess. I mean, what I will say from it, I found it really difficult to research this film, and I found there wasn't a wealth of information about the making of, and there's almost nothing about it kind of reflecting on it. And I can see why, because I don't know why anyone would want to revisit this film. But I couldn't find any other podcasts that have ever looked at it. Again, though, that might be because the problem being with such a generic name is when you Google date movie, you just get 100 suggestions of what a date movie might be, which is a real American phrase.
I just want to add something to that, actually, which I think you'll find very funny, is that I watched a interview promoting this film with Carmen Electra. Why she was doing PR interviews for this when she's in it for the last 20 seconds, I do not know.
Because aside from Alison Hannigan, Fred Willard and Jennifer Coolidge, she's the most well-known name.
No, I was going to say, I do know. It's just really, really sad. That's the case. But you know what I mean? When they're just like, there's a whole big film of all these people and the only way that they can promote it is to have someone who's only in it for 30 seconds. The interviewer asked her what her favorite date movie is, and there was like similar junket with like Sophie Monk and the two leads and whatever, and they were like, oh, I really like this rom-com or whatever, and she just said this film's the perfect date movie. And I was like, oh, Carmen, did your publicist tell you to say that, or do you genuinely believe that? Because I really, really hope that that's not true.
Well, so what I did find, unfortunately, I didn't have access to it because hell no was I buying this on DVD, but apparently on the original DVD release, there was a couple of different director's commentaries. So there was a director's commentary and then a cast commentary. And apparently, like, Alison Hannigan comes off really well in the cast commentary. And she doesn't like dig into it and say it was shit or anything like that. She just talks about how much fun she had filming it. So I do think, you know, I couldn't find anything outside of the original press junket of her talking about this film. And when you look at a film like Batman and Robin, which we will cover in later episodes, George Clooney won't shut up about that film. And I'm like, George, it's not that bad. Please, some of us like it. Like, give us some time.
Right.
George Clooney like will not shut up about how shit that film was and how embarrassed he is about it.
Which is drawing more attention to it.
Yeah. In fairness to Alison Hannigan, maybe it's a classy move that she's just never really, she's never shit on it.
Oh, absolutely. Like, no, I think so.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, as much as this, which I think we'll touch on in a bit about sort of how well it was received and that kind of how much money it made, but ultimately, like, I definitely think that this would have had played a part in her becoming a successful actress, in terms of just her becoming a bit more of a name. Like, people will have gone to see this film because of who it was made by. And obviously, How I Met Your Mother really took off. people knew her from Buffy and things like that and American Pie, but ultimately, like, she was then on that show for however many years. I'm sure that her being in this film would have added to that as well.
Absolutely. She was the biggest name on How I Met Your Mother when it started. Neil Patrick Harris had done Doogie Howser, but that was more of when he was a kid. So she was definitely still the biggest name. And Buffy had been kind of quiet for a couple of years. And even though she'd done American Pie, they'd been quiet for a couple of years. So I do think it was probably a nice reminder that she could be a comedic actress. And in fairness, whilst I do think it is a shit film, Alison Hannigan isn't bad in it. She's quite endearing and quite sweet. And I think she comes across quite well.
Yep, no, totally agree. Her performance in it, she's got a very charming screen presence. Mm-hmm. And she does reaction shots really well. I think that you can believe that, even though it's a parody film, you don't have to believe anything. Like, you believe that she is like a genuine character, whereas obviously all the other characters are parodies on something. She's supposed to be a parody of Bridget Jones, but not really, because the only reference that they really make is the fact that she's overweight, which Bridget Jones never was anyway.
And she has a diary
at the beginning, which, the one thing that I was questioning about Alison Hannigan is at the beginning when she writes what her weight is, how many cigarettes she smokes, 1,000. Yeah. When she says about the alcohol status, Tara Reid level, are they not supposed to be friends? Did she not? I mean, she worked with Tara Reid in American Pie, so I thought it was a bit of a low blow for her to be doing that, unless Tara Reid was in on the joke.
Well, I definitely don't think Tara Reid was in on the joke, but I do also think Tara Reid was kind of open to being kicked when she was down during that period, which is horrible. But also Jennifer Coolidge was in that film as well, so that they both got American Pie links. I wondered.
I just felt like it was a bit harsher, the fact that she was the one.
I wondered if that was something though in post production, because she doesn't say it out loud, does she? We only see it visually.
No.
So maybe she wasn't aware, but also that was very much what was funny at that time. And I mean, I'm guilty of it as well. 2006, I spent half my life reading Perez Hilton, which was just this horrible, bitter man looking at, you know, paparazzi shots of these poor girls just out trying to have fun and ripping apart, like, oh my God, look, she missed a bit of her fake tan. Or, oh my God, look, her elbow looks funny. And I lapped it up. We forget how recent that kind of horrible culture was.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think if they hadn't have been linked in that film...
You would bat an eyelid.
Maybe, like, I feel like that might be harsh if they might actually be friends. Yeah, no, I wouldn't have batted an eyelid, because that's exactly the kind of humour that these kind of films think is funny. So
yeah. So we spoke a little bit. I mentioned that Carmen Electra got her Golden Raspberry Award for Worst Supporting Actress. It also won a Golden Schmoes Worst Movie of the Year Award, and it got the Worst Screenplay and Most Painfully Unfunny Comedy from the Stinkers Bad Movie Awards. I didn't know there were so many awards for bad movies.
Neither did I, but I feel like as part of this podcast, we really need to be paying some attention to that this year.
We're going to get involved.
Yeah, maybe we should do like a special award. So maybe we should do award season, Claire.
Oh, God.
I wonder if they happen at the same time as the other award season.
Yeah, because the Golden Raspberries always happen the day before the Oscars, or maybe the day after.
Oh, there you go. There you go. Also, in terms of awards, Jennifer Coolidge also was nominated for the most annoying fake female accent in the Stinkers Bad Movie Awards in 2006 as well.
She was.
Which I thought, to be fair, like, I know it was a proper, proper play on it's Barbara Streisand, isn't it? Yeah. But I think it was done in a way that was a loving parody.
I didn't think, of all the problems I had with this movie, that wasn't one of them.
That was not one of them. Yeah, absolutely.
Her accent in Two Broke Girls, I have major issues with.
I don't think I've seen her in that. I've definitely seen that TV show on my TV at some point.
I loved Two Broke Girls because I love Kat Dennings, who was the main brunette girl in it. Really big fan of Kat Dennings. And it couldn't quite find its footing. And Jennifer Coolidge, I don't even know if she turns up in season one or if it's season two. But once she turns up, it just is downhill fast. And I don't mind Jennifer Coolidge.
I quite like Jennifer Coolidge.
She's a horrific kind of Russian, I think, parody. And her accent in it is just offensive in every way, shape and form.
speaking of accents, and when she's in Friends and she does a fake British accent.
Oh god.
But that's the whole point. The character is meant to be doing a fake British accent, so that's quite funny. I just love how somehow Jennifer Coolidge is associated with accents. I never had that in my head before, but apparently that's what she's well known for, or not in a good way.
Yeah. So talking of reception, I did a little deep diving and it came out in the on the 17th of February 2006, so just in time for Valentine's Day in America, and a week later in the UK on the 26th of February. So in the UK, it went to number one at the box office. This was a really successful film. But then I delved more. Do you know what was in the top five that week in the UK?
Oh no! Is it quite shoddy stuff?
At number one we have Date Movie. At number two, Chicken Little.
Oh gosh,
Chicken Little! What a film!
Yeah, number three. Okay, I'm starting to understand this now.
Lucky Number 7.
Right.
Number four, Final Destination 3.
Right.
And number five, Big Mama's House 2.
What a week for the cinema.
I mean, cinema is art, right? This week sums up cinema is art.
I feel like that could be, if so, you know, like people have those debates and they're like, answer this question, true or false, is this blah, 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 blah. And people do like whole video essays or essays and dissertations and stuff. Just a picture of that box office list could be evidence for how cinema is not art. No, I'm only half joking. I think I've seen two of those films.
I've seen none of them.
From what I know about the others, I'm not now as surprised that Date Movie won.
Yeah.
And the thing is as well with box office, all it tells you is that people have responded to the marketing, especially with opening weekends anyway, is that people have responded to the marketing to go and see it. It's the, obviously after that, the reviews, etc., which show you whether those people actually enjoyed it. However, something that I was thinking of is that, are these films really, they're not made for critical reception. Like, most of these parody films aren't even shown to critics beforehand. This one was.
Well, I've got conflicting. I read two websites that said it wasn't, and then I read one website that said it was. So I don't know if it was or not, and I wonder if it was, but like at the last minute or only to a very small amount, because I read conflicting reports on that one.
Right. Yeah, maybe it was just a friendly journalist. Mm. Maybe it wasn't like a big thing, because and I mean, it makes sense why it wouldn't be done, because if they had any kind of, but even then, if you did, you could still ask them to do it under embargo, because I was just going to say, obviously, if you then get all of these critics panning it when it comes out, even if someone was just like, oh, that might be quite funny, you can be influenced the other way if you see that everyone was just, even the critics are like, we get why you want to spend your money, but don't, like, they'll still be able to communicate with those audiences. It's just those audiences tend to care less about critical reception for a film like this.
When I was also trying to think, I was remembering when, like, I was a little bit younger, so a couple of years before this would have come out, like when I was like 13, 14, 15, one of the few things living where we lived, the cinema was kind of one of the only things to do. You could wander around the shops or you could go to the cinema, and the cinema was always cheaper than buying.
When you're a teenager,
and
every weekend you just be like, what's on at the cinema? And that was when it was quite cheap as well, which was nice.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so I was remembering like going to the cinema in like a group of like 10 or 12 of you, like a few girls, a few boys. Really, really difficult to pick a film. And whilst there might have been like a good film on that someone wanted to watch, other people might be like, no, that's really serious, I don't want to watch it. And so films like this...
You don't want to pick films that you had to pay attention to, really. That's not why you were going. You were one of those... If you're in a group of, you know, teenagers going to see a film at the weekend, you're not there to see the film.
No.
You're there to have a laugh, which is a shame, because now I go to cinemas and I'm like, oh my God, there's a group of teenagers here. They're not going to be taking the film seriously.
I actually find that the over 65s are worse than the teenagers in the cinema.
Oh.
They're always talking. And I'm like, dude, I know you're deaf, but I'm not. I can hear you.
Listen, you don't have a... You're retired. You've got all day to talk.
Yeah,
now,
exactly.
Now when you come in here, it's quiet time.
It's the only thing. I miss cinemas, but I don't miss cinema audiences. But I digress. I could do a whole other podcast ranting about that. But I was thinking, you know, putting myself back in those shoes, I can definitely think that we would all be like, this film is probably going to be shit, but bits of it might be funny. Better to go in and try, and we all have the same opinion, then we go and see something that two people like and the rest hate. So I do think that is also, because that would have been half term, I do think that really adds up as well. But yeah, we already mentioned the IMDb. You spoke about it being a box office success earlier. So it cost $20 million to make, and it made $84.8 million, so four times the cost, which is great. And I think most of that $20 million went on the King Kong shot at the end. But Rotten Tomatoes scores. So the critics meter, the tomato meter, 7%. Good job, critics. I applaud you. Daisy, do you know what the audience score was?
I think the audience score is probably going to be higher. If I remember rightly, I'm pretty sure it was around like 20-something percent.
It was 35%.
Stop.
So that's not really that high. But let's all track back to a couple of weeks ago when we looked at The Flintstones. The audience score for the original Flintstones is 24%. So apparently people think that Date Movie is a better film than the John Goodman and Rick Moranis Flintstones movie.
Claire is out for blood. If you are one of those people, consider you might now be on her hit list.
I saw it and I went, what? Because I saw the 7 and I was like, yeah. And then I saw the 35 and I went, what?
Not enough love for Flintstones is what we can conclude right here, right now.
Also a bit too much love for Date Movie, lads. It's not a great one. So I meant to say this earlier when we were going through the plot. I did write this down. It gets better as it goes on. And then I wrote, or have I just accepted it? Do I not remember it being that bad because the ending is better than the beginning? Maybe I have Stockholm Syndrome because I was just watching it for what felt like years. It just by the end of it, you're like, that wasn't that bad. I do think, you know, you lose the last like half an hour, 40 minutes. There's a lot less of those fat phobic gross out jokes, which massively helps.
Yeah.
And it leans a lot more into the rom-com tropes, again, massively helps.
And it just settles on a storyline because the thing, obviously, it starts off mainly with My Big Fat Greek Wedding, and then it goes to meet the parents and then meet the Fockers. But because those two are the same in a series, cognizantly, if that's the right word, it just makes more sense for it. It's a big word for a bloody podcast about Date Movie. but it just works. It makes more sense in the sort of like slapdash way they put it together, because naturally those film storylines relate to each other. If they'd have chosen a different rom-com at the end, I think it would have been just as disjointed, and it would have been every time they... And I think the thing is with this film, these kinds of films, is it takes you out of it so much because, and don't get me wrong, I'm not looking to be immersed. It's a parody film. I get that. I'm there to see the references, but I think it would have, you know, you were saying about how does it get any better? I think it's just because it just settles into a bit more of a rhythm. Mm-hmm. Whereas if they'd have chosen a different third film that wasn't related to the other two, I think that's, you wouldn't have had that.
Yeah, I agree. Do you want to take us into some reviews or some trivia? Because you have done, while I was busy clicking on bad websites and getting very confused and just giving up on life, you actually did find some interesting things for us.
Well, I think I've kind of touched a bit on the trivia already. Mm-hmm. The trivia that I found did say that it was screened for critics before release, which is rare for a Seltzer and Friedberg movie, specifically those two directors, apparently. But I don't know whether that means all the ones that they've been involved with or just the ones they did as a duo, because there are certain ones they're just going off shooting on their own. Things like Vampires Suck, I think, is another one for us on the list at some point, Claire.
I mean, I do really like vampire movies, so I don't really like Twilight, so but I do like vampire movies.
Interesting to know whether that will mean you will like that film more or dislike it more.
Yeah, because I also really like rom-coms, and I didn't. Well, so this I'm going to go back to this point, and I think I've already made it, but I just want to go back to it again. This is meant to be I don't know if it is actually. To me, this was meant to be a film parodying rom-coms, but instead it parodies Napoleon Dynamite and Lord of the Rings.
Really badly, by the way. The joke is literally him. The joke for Napoleon Dynamite is literally him just going, "Gah!"
Yeah.
Five times. Over one after the other, and then dancing away. Like, I mean,
you all know the two best lines from that film are "Vote for Pedro" and "I like your sleeves." Yeah. They're real big. You know, if you're gonna copy Napoleon Dynamite, they're the ones you go for.
All I want to do now is just watch all the films that they reference.
Well, so I did. I started making a list of the films I wanted to watch.
I also then
thought maybe I should watch Scary Movie and see if Scary Movie holds up so badly. And then I just went, I don't want to. And I watched Avengers and Ant-Man instead.
Good choice. I am going to be watching the other Scary Movies because I think 5 is on our list, and yes. I'd quite like to watch the whole series to be able to get the whole story of why this one is particularly bad when the first one is good. But the thing is with these reference ones, the parodies, is that I just then want to go not only to revisit the ones that I like that it's spoofing, but the ones that I haven't actually seen, because ultimately those jokes were probably a bit lost on me where I hadn't seen what it was even referencing.
Yeah, but what annoyed me personally, and then I think about it, because I guess I think it's meant to be a rom-com parody, but a date movie isn't necessarily a rom-com, so maybe that's why they did parody kind of big films that you might go and see on a date, like Lord of the Rings and things. Though I will say, if anyone ever tried to take me on a date to see Lord of the Rings, I'd walk out. I know you're a fan, but...
Actually, well... Yeah, I mean, I do like Lord of the Rings, but I wouldn't say, like, I'm a massive fan. However, if you move that story around and say Star Wars, then when are you picking me up? Because I'm going to go on a date to see Star Wars.
Oh, 100%.
But yeah, Lord of the Rings, I don't understand the reference. Like, it makes sense what you just said about why they're, like, sprinkling them in.
Mm.
But I think it just loses itself by doing that. It takes you out of the tiny bit of immersion that you did get from the fact that this is meant to be a play on rom-coms when they just put random stuff. The Kill Bill one I didn't mind because I was like, haha, it's a play on the word bride. Like, yeah. I get that. But the Lord of the Rings one, oh, they're in a jewelry store, oh, the ring. It's just too superfluous. Is that the right word?
Yeah.
I just throw words like word of the day.
You are selling them with confidence.
If I just say them like I know what they mean.
It's what we all do.
People think I know what they mean. You keep saying that word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
It's how I taught a class of 30 11-year-olds to spell vicious wrong for 6 months because I thought I knew how to spell vicious. I did not.
It happens to the rest of us.
I still don't know if I do. I'm too scared to write it down now. Take us to some reviews, Daisy.
Okay. The reviews are fun. I think I'm going to start with some audience ones. And I'm actually going to start with someone you may know. Me.
Hey.
I found my old Letterboxd review from a couple of years ago. Maybe it was 2015 or 16 when I said that I had watched it before. So my review reads, I double billed this with Kevin and Perry, got the name right that time.
Well done.
And it seems as though this is America's answer to ridiculous infantile humour. I'm not against that. I just prefer wit over fat jokes. The film references are what I stay for. That's my jam. Plus, I love Alison Hannigan, but she probably could do a lot better than this. I think the vibe is the same. I'm just a lot harsher this time.
Past Daisy is wise.
I just prefer wit over fat jokes is definitely something I still stand by.
I'll have it on a t-shirt.
Yeah, absolutely. Just wear it. If they ever bring out these parodies again, just wear it to the Samari time.
Well, I did see something in your notes about future parodies.
Yes, yes. Oh my God. Okay, so this is a big one. This is big news for someone like me. So in pre-production for these two director writers is a parody of Star Wars. It is called at the moment Star Worlds Episode XXXIVE equals MC squared : The Force Awakens The Last Jedi Who Went Rogue. So, you know, they're still not funny, and you can tell by the title. I can see what they're trying to do, but no one's going to say that in the cinema when they're buying a ticket. So, yes, it's funny, I think, inverted commas. Not inverted commas, quote marks. But, like, yeah, I don't know. I'm really intrigued for them to bring out something like this whenever they're bringing it out, 2022. Because I just feel like the world I don't know if the world's going to respond to this anymore.
But Star Wars fans will pay and see it, so they've that's got so they know yeah, how to make money. Yeah, and I'll go see it too. I know I will. We'll do. We can do a special live episode. We can meet up in Bexley Heath and go to the Cineworld and to have little like microphones with us through straight after the film ends, emergency episode.
Honestly. But you're right. What a sucker I am, because I 100% am going to see that. Just have me.
They've just
more
gone.
Curiosity.
What's the biggest franchise? Because like they could do Marvel or they could do DC, but Star Wars is still where that money is.
I bet you that was their meeting. That was their pre-production meeting, and went, right, guys, it's Star Wars or Marvel, and they basically just went, yeah. They just made a decision. I bet they threw a dice.
Well, no, it's because. People that don't like Marvel or people that don't like comic book films just don't go watch comic book films for the most part. If you're not a comic book fan, you just don't go and see them. People that don't like Star Wars films tend to be jaded fans who think that the franchise lost its way. So they will go and see every film 6 times just so they can write their essay or their YouTube video to tell us all why we are wrong.
That about Star Wars, about you. You're like, people who don't like comic book films just don't go and see them. People who don't like Star Wars, I was about to say, are exiled. You're not allowed to not like Star Wars, apparently. And I'm very conscious about when people say, I haven't seen Star Wars, I don't like Star Wars, because it is honestly within me to go, what do you mean? But like, you know, everyone's allowed to like what they like / not have to see everything in existence. However, me and my housemates are watching Star Wars all the way through at the moment. And my best friend hasn't seen them before and she's loving it. And honestly, it's the best experience watching them for the first time. So maybe she'll have to come with me to see this.
Yes.
That would be quite funny. But yeah, so they're still going, these guys. God help them.
And we will still give them our money because we are bad people.
Yeah, well, listen, maybe they need to get into the bottom 100 before we do that, but probably not. We'll probably go straight away. Some other audience reviews I found. King of McDonald's on IMDb said, I would pay someone to kick me in the balls for paying to see this movie.
I am pleased to say that both times I've seen it, I technically didn't pay to see it, so I have not provided them any money for
Same,
this film.
Actually. Both part of subscription services, which is great to see. Roger Borg on IMDb, what the writers and directors seem to have missed is that if you're going to parody or satirize a scene from a decent movie, you actually have to add something. It's not sufficient to just throw a bunch of stolen scenes together in the hope that the conjunction will generate humour by itself.
And perfect review. That is the perfect summation of what this movie is. Roger Borg
also said,
has it down.
We salute you. He also said, I have to wonder if these films are deliberately aimed at the lowest common denominator.
Oh, 100%.
I understand what he's saying here. He's just that they're just like, what is the cheapest stuff we can do that, you know, if that means that one person in the theatre laughs, but we don't have to make any effort to make it funnier so that the whole theatre laughs, we'll just go for the one that makes... Do you know what I mean? It's like... They don't want to make any effort, but as long as they think maybe one or two people will laugh, then it's fine.
Well, it's the whole toilet humour thing. People that find toilet humour funny find it fucking hilarious. And those of us that don't still make a noise because we've grown. So you're still getting an audience response.
True.
Good or bad, you're getting a response.
And I think that's, you know, that's exactly what these kind of films want. Mm-hmm. They just want a response. And also they're the kind of films that, you know, you were saying, obviously people are going to go see it for multiple reasons. Also, people are going to go and see it because they know how bad they are as well. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, look at what we're doing, you know? It's exactly the kind of...
We've just offered to pay these men to go and see a new Star Wars movie because we want to see how bad it is. We are the problem.
We are the problem, not the solution.
In fairness, if it wasn't Star Wars, I wouldn't pay. I just want to put that out there.
No.
I've seen the first 3 or 4 scary movies and I've seen Date Movie. I haven't seen any others.
you might change your mind. This is one of 11 parody films that we're going through, so you might change your mind by the end.
I'm intrigued about the Hunger Games, the Starving Games, because I'm a huge Hunger Games girl.
Right.
So I'm intrigued about that one.
Pop it on the list. We'll move it up the queue. You're going to regret saying that.
Sorry. More reviews from Daisy. Daisy's Review Corner.
Yes. Daisy's Review Corner. So moving on to critics, just off of the toilet humour comment, I think this is just spot on. The New York Post, which I also love how all of these, like, proper, like, newspaper, not that blogs etc aren't proper at all, but just the very straight-laced kind of,
there's something from, know, especially like the before internet times, they just seem proper.
It's just hilarious when the New York Post, for example, mm-hmm. is like, you just think, well, I don't know what the New York Post is like, really, because I don't live in America.
But it might be posh.
Tabloid. It might be a tabloid. I don't know. But it's just funny that newspapers are commenting on this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. I just feel like it's lowbrow even for news. Well, I mean, maybe not. Newspapers can go pretty lowbrow. But, you know, yeah. Anyway, New York Post has said it's rated PG-13 because 13 is the maximum age of those who might find it funny. Yep. True. Don't see the lies there.
No.
Don't see the lie. Peter Bradshaw, a very famous critic. I used to read quite a lot of his reviews. Wonderful way with words, has said, a deeply rubbish film.
I agree, Peter.
doesn't need to any more said than that. The New York Times, again, big newspaper, basically, again, just saying about the kind of level of humour and the age of people who would enjoy it, a good point that they've made is some of the references to films such as Sleepless in Seattle, Pretty Woman, were actually made when the target audience for this film weren't even born.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like you're relying on people to know these references, but are the people that you're directing these jokes at even going to know what those references are? And if they do, are they going to find what you're saying funny?
Yeah.
Which is an interesting point. Very interesting point. And then the Rotten Tomatoes consensus was, in an attempt to parody rom-com cliches, date movie ultimately makes a mockery of itself with juvenile toilet humour and empty pop culture references, which is Rotten Tomatoes, sometimes their consensuses are quite funny and surprising, but mm-hmm. I think that's just kind of a summary of everything we and audiences and critics have kind of said.
Yeah, but, you know, if we're tracking our films, we're on film two. According to IMDb, this one is worse. According to Rotten Tomatoes audience, this one is better. Daisy, where does it fit on you on the scale?
Oh my god, this is so much worse than Flintstones.
Good answer. Correct answer.
So much worse. Like, yeah. I mean, it's surprising to me that they're in the same ballpark.
Mm-hmm.
According to the sort of system that we're using, it's a shame. case, but you know, they're obviously rated low for different reasons. But yeah, 100% should not even. I don't think that they should even be compared in this way. But that's the beauty of this podcast, I guess, exploring films in this way.
Absolutely.
I'm guessing you agree.
Oh, 100%. Love Alison Hannigan. As I said last week, love anyone with red hair. You know, we're few and far between.
Yeah.
But, you know, she tried, she failed. It was offensive. It also wasn't funny. That's where we are.
Also, some of the jokes that they make, I made a note of when they're on the date and they're talking about... I can't remember what they were saying, but then basically she was just like, oh, I want to know some things about you. What's your favourite love song? And then he starts singing Candy Shop by 50 Cent, but sings it like...
A cappella.
Doesn't rap it, like a cappella. And then they start singing it very like, oh, together. that joke is done, but well, in The Hangover. When they have you seen The Hangover?
Yeah, but I don't remember anything about that.
Do you remember the wedding right at the end? There's a wedding band.
Oh, yeah.
And the guy sings it, and that is how you do a joke like that properly. Yeah. That tickles me every... And I know it's silly, and I, like, it's just...
The Hangover, for some people, is an offensive, gross-out humour film, but it's still funny. Mm-hmm. Like, I find the Hangover funny, but I can also put on a different hat and be like, the Hangover is really misogynistic and very offensive.
Oh, yeah.
It's still funny at the same time. Date movie misses the funny. It just doesn't have the funny.
Yeah, and then you're just left wanting to rock back and forward into a corner. I don't think I'm ever going to be able to look at a cat of that breed in the same way again. Luckily, the cats that I live with don't look like that. But if I ever see a cat like the one that's in this film, I might have a mental breakdown, because all of the scenes that this cat is in, I genuinely will relive in my nightmares. I'm not even exaggerating. It's horrific.
My colleague, who I mentioned earlier, that has the cat that uses the toilet, it's the same breed.
Oh my God, no, Claire, don't tell me that. No, there's a cat that lives like this. This cat is
two. She has two of them. Baloo and Ikema.
Oh my God, this is nightmare fuel. Even to the point where I find things like that probably more gross than other people do. Like, just even like the joke at the end where the cat is having a date with her neighbour.
Oh yeah,
remember that bit? Like, even that creeps me out ridiculously. So I'm like, you can imagine, and maybe it's because of we've already seen what this cat is capable of, that I'm like, felt physically sick when I saw him feeding an old woman at the table. Like, that wasn't even that bad, but I think I just was reliving his penchant for old women.
I'm really concerned for your safety when we have to watch cats.
Oh, no, that's just horrifying on another level. Like, just like in a different way.
Okay.
This was like, I feel sick. That's just, what did I eat? Like, am I hallucinating? Yeah. More on that on another episode, essentially. But I just wanted to mention a few other things as well. Like, I don't know about you, because I was just thinking about, obviously, we've talked about the writing a lot, because that's basically where this is a big downfall.
Mm-hmm.
The production itself, pretty inoffensive, pretty slick. Like, you know,
looks
you can
really
tell
pretty.
Looks really nice. I don't know about you, but some people hate the whole light, bright, bland cinematography. You know, the kind that I'm talking about, where all of the rom-coms and comedies,
I think it has its place.
Yeah, there's no personality to the cinematography, but I kind of like that in things like this, because it creates a little bit more of a grounded feel.
I love fake New York, where women walk around in high heels in the sunshine and all have jobs at newspapers. It's the dream I still want to live.
Funnily enough, I watched Devil Wears Prada straight after this.
There we go.
Do you know what I mean? It is that kind of clean, crisp, just a romanticised version of what you're seeing on screen. And like you say, I think it has a place. Some people absolutely hate it. And I'm like, but we don't really want the camera to have a personality in this kind of story. This is a very, like you said, with the rom-coms, it's I can't remember how you describe it, but it's basically a riff on real life relationships. So it's kind of, you want it to have that kind of grounded feel.
Yeah, it's already a satirization and a kind of an over the top of something real. And so these films are taking New York and glossing it with magic movie paint.
Yeah. And I love that. I like doing that. You know, it's very upsetting when you do go and you're like, this looks nothing like the films. But I don't really want to be going anywhere and be like, this looks nothing like Date Movie.
I went to New York and I thought New York, it didn't look the same as it does in all films, but I thought New York held up quite well.
When I went to LA,
I was horrified.
Yeah, I know. Although, fun fact, in LA, I stayed in a hostel that was literally on the other side of the block to the mural that Mia walks past in La La Land.
That's so cool.
And I didn't know. I didn't see it.
That's so sad. I stayed in downtown LA and we were around the corner from a 5-star brunch restaurant, which, yay. So we walked on our first day in LA, walked to this wonderful brunch restaurant, which was quite fancy and quite expensive. And as we got outside to open the door, just outside the restaurant, a homeless man pulled his pants down and took a shit.
Oh my God.
Welcome to LA.
Yeah, geez.
Yeah,
LA's a funny one. LA's a funny one. Definitely one that I think looks better on film. But,
absolutely. Yeah. I will take the pretty LA paint any day.
Cool. So I guess we can sort of think about how we want to sort of leave our feelings for date movie. And I know that maybe you wanted to have a quick chat about maybe what some of our favourite rom-coms are as well.
First of all, what I do want to say, there are 11 of these films, and I thought this one was going to be easy, and I'm a little bit broken already, and it's only film two. There's 11 of them in the 100, so that's basic. That's over one every 10 films. So I think the only way we do this is we're going to have to schedule them like that. So we've got nine more films to watch now, and then we're going to have to do another one of these, because I don't think we can leave them to the end, because we'll kill ourselves.
No. But also, obviously, we want to have people come on and talk about any films that they are, whether they really like them or they just think it, they have a lot to say. So I guess, in a way, there's not too many people that have sort of requested them at the moment, which I actually very much understand. But maybe there is. Maybe there are people out there.
But yeah, so we talked about all the rom-coms, and I suggested to you that maybe we do our top five rom-coms, because I was thinking after watching this that I would go on a bit of a rom-com binge. I went completely the other way I think I needed a break. You went all in. you just went for it.
It was before watching this, though, because I planned to watch When Harry Met Sally. Obviously, New Year's Eve, very different this year, 2020. So I was like, what can I do that's really low-key but quite fun? And I always see these joke tweets about, if you start watching so-and-so, at midnight this will happen. And I was like, I'm going to do one. And I was like, I'm going to do a bit more of a wholesome one, though, rather than sitting down for Endgame again. Although I did leave it up to Twisted to decide. I timed When Harry Met Sally, so the countdown at the end of the film timed up with the countdown, and I cried so many happy tears. It was bliss. I loved it. And I was like, oh, my God, I feel so, like in the zone now. I want to watch another rom-com, because I feel like I don't really, I like them, but I let myself like them, I think is the thing. Which that's changing. 2021, I'm letting myself like them. I watched 10 Things I Hate About You after that.
Yay.
And then yesterday I watched The Devil Wears Prada with my housemate. So I'm definitely on a bit more of a rom-com kind of.
See, interestingly,
it's comforting, isn't it?
I would argue that Devil Wears Prada is not a rom-com. It's a chick flick. It's not a rom-com.
Oh, okay.
It's a great film.
I'll let you have that one.
Because when I was trying to do my list, I had to be really strict, because I was like, if I allow chick flicks, like, my list will be never ending, because I fucking love a chick flick. So to me, Devil Wears Prada, though she has a boyfriend and a love interest,
it's not about
the romance. Yeah. It's just a female-led kind of dramedy.
Yeah. Well, I don't count that as in some of the ones I'll mention, so... I'm all covered. Did you want to share? I can share what my top five are.
Yeah, as it stands. You go first.
They're not really top five. They're more. Oh my God! Of course you have.
I sent you a list of 20.
Yeah, it's true. Mine aren't a definitive top five list of all time. Mine's just a handful of ones that I know that I love, I do watch a lot, or have recently revisited and realised how bloody great they are, starting with When Harry Met Sally. Like, I've seen it once before, watched it in New Year's, might have been the circumstances that I watched it in, but I just thought it was delightful. It's not without its flaws, but to me, just bloody love it. La La Land, I could watch that film every week.
Oh my God, I haven't put La La Land in my list. La La Land's my favourite movie of all time.
I have seven.
I equally don't consider it a musical. Right. So please, I'm just saying, where it doesn't fall in my list, it's not because I don't love it.
It's just you're very, very specific about what counts as a rom-com.
Yes.
I was wondering whether you were going to be like, no, that's a musical. And I'm like, yeah, but it's a rom-com musical. But, you know.
But it's not a comedy.
It is funny, though.
But it's not a comedy. Being funny and being a comedy are two different things.
According to Letterboxd, it's a comedy.
Yeah, I was looking at Letterboxd for rom-coms. I was like, we have very different definitions here, Letterboxd.
Okay, well, scrap La La Land then.
Look at La La Land.
So I want to play by your rules. So When Harry Met Sally counts, right? So I'm one down.
Yeah, that's a definitive rom-com.
500 Days of Summer.
Yes. That is on my list too.
That was on your long list, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's on my list too. What a beautiful film.
10 Things I Hate About You. Again, rewatched that the other day. I'm waiting for you to turn around and be like, what's not a comedy?
So originally I did not have 10 things I hate about you on my list because I decided it was a teen film rather than a rom-com.
Oh my.
Then when you rewatched it, I did think, no, actually the romance is a really big element. So
the whole thing
is about how hard it is to be a teenager.
No, listen, I'm going to disagree with you on that one.
I'm allowed that one. I was wrong. I was very wrong on 10 things I hate about you. Yeah, no.
Okay, so what have I got now? Have I got three? You've allowed me three? Yes. Okay. Enchanted.
Oh, love it.
A bit. Yeah, is that good?
I wouldn't consider it a rom-com, but I'm going to let you have it.
Why? Because it's a Disney film.
I would consider it a fairy tale film. I think
you're so specific.
No, but like with Enchanted, I don't really have a reason why I wouldn't consider it a rom-com. Just, I don't consider it a rom-com.
Fine.
But I love Enchanted. I love Amy Adams. I love Patrick Dempsey. I love musicals. What's not to love?
Literally.
Oh, pardon the cockroaches.
Also, oh my God, no, for me, that scene is the rats.
Oh, no. I have many a cockroach tale from my times in Dubai. I'm traumatised for life.
Oh, God. I'm not even going to ask it.
Please don't.
We'll ask about that question off the spot. No, I don't want to know.
No, don't.
And then lastly, it's a little bit of a guilty pleasure, except I don't believe in the concept of guilty pleasures. There's nothing guilty about liking what you like. Have you ever watched this Netflix original called Set It Up?
Oh, that's cute. I liked that film.
Yeah, I thought it was really cute. And I think I really related to it because of the kind of environment they're in work-wise. Very fast-paced kind of. And like, they just basically want to set their bosses up so that they can get a life. And I'm very much an all work, no date situation. So I highly related to it. And I thought the leads were very charming. Mm-hmm. They were very cool. And it was just a really nice, warm, fuzzy kind of, but quite fresh.
Yeah.
Now that is a rom-com.
That's dripping in rom-com.
Definition. Dripping in rom-com. So yeah, there you go. There's a little insight into the kind of things that I like. Not a definitive list like Claire's. Claire's spent hours over deliberating. Go on. Hit me with your best shot.
Okay, so I'm taking 10 Things I Hate About You off, not because I don't think it's a rom-com. I've changed my mind on that one, but because it was on your list. So I'm going to take it off mine.
Okay.
I am going to keep 500 Days of Summer, though, because to me that is a pretty perfect film. And it's so good that it's a rom-com, but it manages to stay a rom-com while subverting some of the elements of the genre. Yeah. Love it.
So smart.
Crazy Stupid Love, which I know you're a big fan of as well.
Oh, yeah, I absolutely love that film. Forgot about that.
I mean, you've got Steve Carell, you've got Ryan Gosling, you've got Emma Stone. It's just perfect.
And Ryan Gosling in that character is...
Oh, my Lord.
It's just so great.
Oh.
So great.
Oh. And when he's vulnerable is when he's at his best. I'm such a girl.
I just love the... When she's like, you look like that? It's just great because I think, again, it does everything that a rom-com does right.
Mm-hmm.
But it twists it. It's got
it still
in it.
Felt really fresh.
Really fresh, yeah. And just fantastic performances, to be honest.
Well, it's the cast in that one as well. The script is great, but the cast really sell it. They run like Julianne Moore as well. Like they did good. And then because I took 10 Things I Hate About You out, I'm a big 90s girl. I'm putting She's All That in.
I know what you're gonna say. Oh, I thought you were going to say Clueless then.
Clueless isn't a rom-com.
Well, I actually already said to myself, she won't let me have Clueless. So, it's a teen film.
It is.
I was about to say there's not enough romance in it. There is plenty of romance, but not to your standard. Anyway, tell me more about She's All That, because I have not seen it.
Oh, my God. It's like the quintessential teen rom-com of the 90s, which... I meant to say, do you know what is a good parody film? It's terrible, but it's brilliant. Mm-hmm. Not another teen movie. That is a good parody film. I really enjoy that film. It's got Chris Evans in. Fun times. And a lot of
it.
Yeah, he was the lead role. But a lot of the plot of that is from She's All That. She's All That is you've got Lainey Boggs, who is a different. She's not like the other girls. She wears glasses and she wears dungarees and she likes art and she has a job and she doesn't have a car and she's just not cool. And then you've got Freddie Prinze Jr., who's all swoonsome and his friends. His girlfriend breaks up with him for a reality TV star, played by Matthew Lillard. So his friend...
Really?
Yeah. So he needs a date to prom that will be better, because he's like, well, now who am I going to bring to prom if she's with this reality TV star? So they're like, we'll make you like a perfect girlfriend. So his friends bet him that he can't turn Lainey Boggs into like the prom queen. And so he starts dating her to like improve her. And then like she finds out that it's all a bet. It's great stuff. Yeah. It's like proper 90s.
That sounds like something that would really wind me up.
Oh yeah, but when you're me and you're 9 years old, just...
Oh yeah, no, but I just mean that's the difficulty with coming into these films now. Mm-hmm. If you don't have that nostalgia attached to them, you're like, what, so she can't be pretty because she wears glasses? Like, I think that will kind of get in the way a little bit. But, you know, I do like Freddie Prinze Jr., so maybe I will give it a go. Oh,
I think it's his best role.
Really?
I do.
Better than Fred?
Honestly. Love
She's
I'll take
your word for it. I'll give it a go at some point.
And then I'm going for Just Like Heaven, which is Reese Witherspoon and Mark Ruffalo, who... two of the best people in the world. Have you seen Just Like Heaven?
I have not, but Mark Ruffalo in a rom-com is definitely something I need more of in my life. Isn't he in 13 Going on 30 as well?
He is. I love that film.
I have seen it, but I don't remember it.
I went for only one of the two, so I went for Just Like Heaven because right. I do. 13 Going on 30 is
that I know nothing about. I know nothing about Just Like Heaven.
So Just Like Heaven, Mark Ruffalo buys a new flat and it's all lovely. And Reese Witherspoon lives in it, but no one else can see her. And turns out she's a ghost.
Oh my God. And so like The Sixth Sense, but
only romantic. Yeah, only he can see her. And and he falls in love with the ghost of Reese Witherspoon.
Oh, that's really sad.
I've read the book. The book is different. The book was fine.
There's a book.
There is a book. I've read the book too. I saw the film first. And it also has the actor who played Napoleon Dynamite in it.
Oh really?
Yeah. In a little bit.
It all comes full circle.
It does all come full circle. But yeah, Just Like Heaven, recommend it. As I say apparently every week, I've got it on DVD. You're welcome to borrow it anytime.
Yeah. That's if they bloody send it to my flat.
Yes, I'm concerned.
I'm still trying to find all the other DVDs you sent me.
Where Scream 4?
I'll be knocking on my neighbour's door. I need to see Scream 4.
You do?
I'm on Scream hype now. And then it will make sense when we go to Scary Movie as well.
Yeah.
Once I've seen all the I know that came
way before.
Yeah, way before.
And then the last one in my top five, I'm going with Definitely Maybe, which is another like massive cliche rom-com.
Oh, Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah, and I've
seen
that. I've got to get my
red
head in.
Remember it though.
I've got to get them in where I can. I just thought I wasn't a big Ryan Reynolds fan. I never disliked him, but I was never like that big into him. I think Definitely Maybe was one of the first films where I was like, oh, actually, like, because I do not like The Proposal. I've never made it to the end of The Proposal. So I think I avoided Definitely Maybe for similar reasons. And when I finally watched it, I was like, that's a really nice film. It was very sweet.
Ah.
So yeah, so...
Yeah, I think there's definitely a... For all of their flaws, I do think there's definitely a place for rom-coms, you know? Yeah.
So I thought...
There's not many around anymore.
Well, that's it, which I loved Happiest Season, which I know you didn't particularly enjoy as much as I did. But I'm so deprived.
I still liked it, though, definitely.
I'm so deprived of rom-coms that I was just like, give it to me, inject it into my veins, I'll take it, I don't care how flawed it is, I need it, I'll just give it.
Fair enough. No, I definitely think that's something that we're missing out on. Right, let's have a think now. Obviously, after our discussion with Al on the last episode with the Flintstones, we were very much like, do you know what? I don't really think it deserves to be here. I have a funny feeling that this episode is going to end slightly differently. Do you think that Date Movie deserves its place in the bottom 100?
Yes, burn it with fire.
So you're not saving it then? Definitely burn it.
Burn it with fire.
Do you think it could have been saved at any point? Or do you think it was just too far gone? Too much was going wrong? It's just...
I think it was flawed from the outset with the writing, because I think they took the ideas, they took the storylines of rom-coms, but they didn't play with anything that makes a rom-com good or bad or funny or different. They just took a rom-com and then decorated it with fart jokes.
Ugh, I just hate it so much.
Yeah.
Do you have a rating?
I looked and I'd put this on Letterboxd as 2.5. I've... removed that rating. I think
2.5, wow, that is generous.
I remember I started this by saying
and I'm I'm really generous with ratings, to be fair.
I had told people this wasn't that bad a film, so obviously at some point I decided it was 2.5, which, yeah, I've definitely rated other much more popular films like that. I'm going to go 1 star.
Are we doing, because I do either out of 10 or half stars.
I do out of 5 with halves, but I'm going for a firm 1.
Okay, perfect. I'm going to go for a 1.5.
Oh.
I think it's just like, it's not in comparison to your 1, it's just in comparison to what I rate other things, yeah. I think. You see what I mean?
So I do it.
Let me just tell you now, I do not ever rate things as slow, ever. So that's saying something. To get a 0.5, we'd have to not even resemble a film. Which I'm sure we'll get to at some point on this list.
What does make me laugh is that means I do still think that this film is better than David Lynch's revered Blue Velvet, which I gave after.
Oh my God, this is crazy. Your hate for Blue Velvet is just madness.
If you told me now I have to rewatch one of the two, I honestly think I might prefer to rewatch Date Movie.
Stop it. You're lying.
I'm really gonna have to watch this. Blue Velvet is probably a better film, but God, putting myself through that again, I think I would actually rather watch Date Movie. At least it had good music.
Yeah, you just close your eyes and listen. Actually, don't, because there's a ton of horrific sound effects.
Yeah, the sound effects are terrible.
Closing your eyes and just imagining what's happening on screen might actually be worse than seeing what's happening on screen.
Yeah.
Cool. So I think that about wraps up for us. But we still want to hear all of your thoughts about today's episode and the film in question. Date Movie, have you already seen it? What's your story behind it? Will you brave it now? Have you watched it to follow along with the podcast? And yeah, do you think it deserves its place on the bottom 100? You can let us know everything. Find us on Twitter and Instagram at WRatedPod and on Letterboxd at WRated. Claire, where can all the good listeners find you on the internet?
I'm at Claire Ellen Hope, Claire without an I, on Twitter and Instagram, which, you know, as I said at the start of the episode, Claire Hope is apparently my new name. So we're going to roll with it.
Roll with it.
Where about you, Daisy?
On Twitter, you can find me at Daisy Vic Edwards, and on Instagram and Letterboxd, it's the full name Daisy Victoria Edwards. So please get involved, have conversations with us. We want to hear everything that you think about these films and other films as well. Thank you for tuning in. We hope you can join us for the next episode, where we'll be exploring the next worst rated film with a special guest. See you then.
See you then.